show are available on every major podcast provider. And you can find video archives, merch, and more on their website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. Now, here are your hosts, two guys who have been broadcasting online since 1996, the godfathers of podcasting themselves, Donnie DeSilva and Chris Tidwell.
Well, I am Donnie DeSilva, such that I happen to be this week in my weakened state. I've been sick as a dog for the last 4 or 5 days. I'm just starting to get my voice back, and here I am hanging out with all of you. It's Thursday, October 26th, and I am going to try to get through this. I wasn't going to do the show this week, but you see, my partner, who's there on screen next to me, he told me, no, Donnie, you have to do the show. Because that raspy, gravelly voice that you have right now, it's really doing something for me. And I said, listen, man, I'm a team player. So I'm happy to help you out. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the Kobe to my Shaq, the Curry to my Clay, the Jordan to my Pippen, Notorious T.I.D., Chris Tidwell.
You have never sounded more non-sexual and sexy all at the same time with that voice of yours. What is really going on back there, Donnie?
No idea what that even means.
You okay? You going to make it this week?
I don't know. I've got a nice tall glass of lemon echinacea tea with about four tablespoons of creamed honey in there.
Is that a nerd cup that you're drinking out of?
No, it's Marvel.
Yeah, same thing. Now, I say that. I was on let's get right into it from last week. I was on vacation while you were being sick, by the sounds of it. I was on vacation last week, and in doing so, are you ready for this? I watched a Marvel movie.
What'd you watch?
Blue Beetle.
That's not Marvel, that's DC, you loser. What?
See, that tells you how much I know right there, right? Okay, let me put it to you this way. I watched a nerd movie.
Okay, did you like it?
Nope.
Yeah, because you're racist. It's about a Latino.
It had nothing to do with being racist. It had something to do with the fact that it was not a good movie. Okay? And I enjoy good Mexican movies. I mean, come on. You know me by now, Donnie. I love that part, but it just wasn't good storytelling at all, in my opinion. It was one of those movies that I kind of put on and you could like doze off for 5-10 minutes and then wake up and not have to worry about missing anything at all. It was still right back where it was. And yeah, I don't know, but I am almost caught up. I will tell you, I am almost caught up on Gen V. Cause I mean, that's just downright hilarious stuff.
If you want a list of good superhero movies to watch, I'll send you some.
I don't know if you heard that part. I don't want a list of good superhero movies.
You know who I know doesn't have time to watch superhero movies?
Who dat?
Is our guest this week. Well, it's time right now, ladies and gentlemen, for the big hello. And I first became aware of this gentleman when he was just a young kid in high school. I was coaching at a rival school when I saw him play throughout the regional playoffs and then watched him lead his team to a championship. I'd been tipped off by friends that this slim, old school point guard was the coach's kid, who himself was an absolute legend. The following season, I wanted to learn from the best. So I ended up switching schools and I wanted to be part of the same basketball program that they were. I helped coach the junior boys team, which featured this man's younger brother, Andrew, while having plenty of opportunities to get to know our guest and talk to him about school, basketball, and life. That's also when I learned that he could hit a full court, behind the back, no rim, shot, no kidding. After an incredible high school career, he was offered a scholarship to a D2 school, Stonehill University in Massachusetts. I had the opportunity to go down and visit him while he was a player there, and to say that it might be one of the most picturesque campuses in the country is probably not hyperbole. He had an incredible 4-year career as a player and went on to play professionally in England before heading back to Canada and accepting the role of assistant coach at Acadia, where his younger brother, Andrew, was the star point guard. He helped Acadia win the conference championship that season and then spent 2 years as the top assistant at Brandon, helping them win back-to-back conference titles. He then went back to Stonehill, where he was named as an assistant coach before picking up the title of head coach in 2013. That made him the first Canadian head coach in NCAA basketball history. In case you haven't seen the pattern, like DJ Khaled, all he does is win, 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 no matter what. In fact, at Stonehill, he is the single connecting thread between all three of the program's Elite Eight appearances in the NC2A Division II tournament. He got there once as a player, once as an assistant, and once as a head coach. Last season, Stonehill accepted the opportunity to make the jump from D2 to Division I, baby, and they were impressive, going 10-6 in conference play on his way to being named the 2023 Northeast Conference Coach of the Year. Ladies and gentlemen, open up the door. Let us into your house. He's a real good guy with a real nice spouse. He's a pretty chill dude, but he ain't no mouse. This is my man, Mr. Stonehill, Coach Chris Krause.
I appreciate the intro. I appreciate all that. Right into the house. I love it sitting here in my house. Donnie, it all made me think way back in the day, if you can't beat them, join them. And you came and joined us. So, hey, you know, we took you in back then. So thanks for having me on. I appreciate you guys having me.
Smartest choice I ever made was getting into the fold with you guys. I learned more in that first season than I had in the previous 5 years of coaching. So, yeah, it was a complete eye opener for me personally. Thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight, man. I know you're busy. You guys are getting ready for the season kickoff. When is season kicking off?
So we are a week and a half away. I think it's about 11 days from right now. We open up our second year at the Division I level. So our D1 season kicks off November 6th at George Washington University down in D.C. So we're at GW. Yes, we're right around the corner. And getting excited, and we're eager, anxious, you know, all the above. Our kids are sick of preseason. They're sick of practice and ready to start playing some other people and see what we got.
Last year at this time, when you were getting ready for your first D1 season, I'm sure a lot of stuff was going through your head. We're going to play in bigger spaces. We're going to play in front of bigger crowds. We're going to play against bigger kids, more length, more athleticism. After your first full year at the D1 level, what did you not expect that you learned about the differences between the two divisions?
Yeah, I think you look at what we used to do in our old conference, and I think it's just the whole, you don't know what you don't know. It's like marriage. You don't know what marriage is really like until you get into it, you know.
Tell me about it.
Fun, right? So but like we went through a previous full season in a conference schedule where we only had about two or three non-conference games before we prepared for our league play and before our conference. And I appreciate the entire intro and all the info and accolades, but it all comes back to your players just right off the bat with that, which is why the accolades come. But we played in what was considered the top D2 league in the country over here in the States. And we jumped right into league play. So one of the biggest differences for us right now at the Division I level, we play 13 or 14 non-conference games before we kick off our NEC Northeast Conference League. And our league doesn't start until January. So at the Division I level, you basically go through a full onslaught of all the non-conference games. You play the big boys. You play potentially the Blue Bloods. You play all the top teams. You play mid-majors, other comparative low-major teams before you even get going against your own league and against your own level. So that was dramatically different for us and for me. Even coaching right now, like we've been in preseason for the last month and a half, and I've always been used to a preseason grind where we got to get your team ready to roll opening week. And we're still trying to do that, but it's a little bit different because of the caliber and level of teams we play. And I mean, last year, our first game, first ever game at the Division I level, we opened up at this, I'm not sure if you heard of the school, they're called UConn.
UConn?
They're pretty good. And coincidentally,
I watched that game.
Yeah, they go win a national championship last year. So it's a cool little thing. Like we played the national champs night one, you know, in front of 12,000 people. And they rocked us. They kicked us. And But I think just learning from that, and now here we are a year later of the day in and day out grind and the physicality that you play team to team, it prepares us for our own league schedule. It prepares us for NEC play as things get going. I mean, we're going to play UConn again. We play George Washington. We play UConn. We're at Kentucky. We play at Rupp Arena this year. Like that, these experiences and these moments are going to be incredible. Obviously, competitively, they're going to be really challenging for our team, but it's only going to prepare us for our league play in about 2 months. So I've really learned just the patience of the process at this level of kind of what goes into it and kind of, I think, still learning when to push a little bit of buttons with your own team to prepare ourselves for the right matchups along the way.
Do you have a lot of guys that were there last year? Last year was your first year in D1. Do you have a lot of guys back this year, or did you lose a lot of players?
So we did lose a lot. So we graduated four players. Three of them were three starters, four guys, and we actually lost a fifth. So all in all, we're losing five guys and five rotational players from last year. So
you're starting all over again.
All those, like that intro, if we did this again in 12 months, that intro would be a little bit different potentially based on, you know, the current roster or makeup. But no, we lost a lot. I think we lost five of our top six or seven scorers from last year. All of our experience is primarily gone with the exception of one starter. So we've got one returning player. His name's Max Zigarewski. Max was an all-league player last year. He was a third-team all-league kid. He's been preseason number one on the first-team all-league team. So we've got he's a really good player. And then we brought in a lot of really good players, a couple transfers, four incoming freshmen. So we blended it a little bit with youth and some transfers to try to make up for all the guys that we lost. But it's a new group right now, and I mean, our guys are really, really competitive, and I don't think they quite realize yet what's about to happen and what's coming in front of them, but it's going to be a real big learning process for them and our entire team to go through this, but we've still got I think we've got a pretty competitive and a pretty good group that we're going to surprise the people with what we can do.
Sorry.
I was going to say, that kid that you mentioned, Chris, I watched him play last year, got really nice size. I like him a lot. He had a brother that went to Creighton, right?
Yeah. So Max is a 6'8". He's 6'8" wing. He's legitimately one of the best shooters in the country. You could put him up against Duke, wow, North Carolina, Kentucky, who we will put him up against Kentucky. Like he's that good with what he does shooting the ball. And he has a twin brother. His twin brother is Marcus Zigarewski, who played at Creighton. Was drafted, I believe, by the Brooklyn Nets, is now currently playing professionally in Italy. And the other cool thing, so Max's other brother is Michael Carter Williams, who same family, and Michael played at Syracuse and jumped around the NBA for a little while. So he is straight from a basketball family, and they are all really, really, really good players, the whole family.
You said MCW is also his brother?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's a big pedigree with the family there.
So pressure's on Max to make it to the league, huh?
There's a little bit, I think, but he's legitimately, it's not even a question. He's the best shooter in the family. He's that good.
Wow. Sorry, Tid, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, like, I can't imagine that the recruiting process for you guys is a cakewalk by any means. This year, you've only had 1 year in Division I. So that's kind of a thing that you draw people in with, you know what I mean? But you don't have, like, you're not a Georgetown. You're not a, you know what I mean, a UConn. You're not one of these things. How tough is the recruiting process? And do you have any, like, what's the special perk? What's the trick to get these guys to come and play for you?
I think we got to take Tid for a tour of Stonehill. Then he'll know the answer.
So, facility? Is it, like, you know what I mean?
So the campus, to be honest, like we've got legitimately one of probably the top 20 nicest campuses in the country here in the States. I don't, like, even back home in Canada, compared to all the schools, it's cream of the crop, as nice as anywhere. And that's one of our big sells. We're a really, really good academic school too. So it's kind of like you get the best of both worlds of a great academic institution. You're going to walk out with a tremendous degree that's going to set you up for success for the rest of your life. It's an incredibly beautiful campus, and we're playing at the Division I level. So I think like that's part of our sell. But to your point, to your question, recruiting is extremely challenging. You know, it's so much of the have and have nots at this level, at Division I level. And yeah, we're not a Duke, we're not a Kentucky, a UConn, but the majority of schools aren't. You know, I think there's tier, and you've got the high majors, you've got the mid majors and the low major, and we're amongst the low majors, and we compete with other really good academic institutions, the Patriot League, the Ivy League. You know, there we've got some good academic institutions in our league that we go up against where, I mean, we've also got to look at kids' transcripts. So you take an entire world population of basketball players at the high school level. Ours gets narrowed down after we get into the transcripts, making sure that kids are good students. And then, you know, they've got to have the right grades to be eligible for the NCAA clearinghouse and then also our academic admission standards. But it's still so competitive where we've, you know, being a brand new school to the Division I level, it's got that, oh, you're new, you're the new kids on the block, or can you do it, blah, blah, blah. But I think last year, our first year at the level, you know, first year in the league, obviously I was named coach of the year. So that helps when the recruiting that we finished 10-6 overall. We were tied for second, actually with two games left. We actually unfortunately lost our last two on the road, but we were sitting tied in first place with two games left. So we were right on the cusp of basically winning the league in year one. So I think that competitiveness allows us to get in conversations, allows us in, you know, people's households to have these conversations about, hey, come on, let's show you who we are and what we do and, you know, our style of basketball. And I think like kind of another sell that we've had, we sent two of our players last year to play professionally. We're almost crazy as it sounds, like averaging anywhere from, you know, about two guys per year going overseas or going, you know, G League or Canada, but overseas to play professionally. Players come in as, hey, I want to be a pro. Well, we're offering that opportunity with our style of play and what we do, where we're giving those guys that opportunity. So that's kind of been a little bit just of our sell and why, you know, people are coming to Stonehill.
Yeah, that's amazing. Did you end up, I know last season, your first season at D1, you didn't use them all. Did you use all of the 13 full rides that you have in D1 this year?
So we did this year, yeah. Yeah, we weren't able to last year just based on a couple of different factors, but we've got a full group right now.
Nice. Is it kind of like overwhelming though, coming from all those years in the D2 system where you're giving out partials and you've got a total of whatever it was, 10 that you have to play with? And then it's like, man, now I got more to play with. Does it almost feel... Like, is it like empowering or is it a little bit overwhelming?
It's not overwhelming. I mean, it's exciting where you look down the line, you look at your bench, you look at your rotation and you look in practice and you're like, wow, we got more guys. We got more. Yeah. There's a lot more talent now, you know, with just more scholarship level guys. There's the good and bad with it that comes because 10 scholarship guys before, you're basically expecting those guys to play. Now with more bodies, I'm going to be the bad guy more often with more guys when you can only play five guys at once. So it's just, I think
every one of those, every one of those 13 kids on a full ride is a legend at his high school.
Yeah.
And has probably never come off the bench in his life. Right.
Yeah. So but it's hard. And I think that's where the overwhelming element, because I try to be a nice guy and I like our players. I like our guys and I want to do everything we can to support them. But ultimately when certain ones don't get to play, they look at you like, what are you doing, coach? And I'm like, well, yeah, we're just making decisions that for the best interest of the team, but it's sports though, you know, on every team anywhere, somebody's going to get that tail end of it. But I think more like the challenges with 10 to 13 scholarships, there's just that much more that we as a staff are dealing with at this level. There's just more that goes on at the Division I level that we didn't deal with before, which kind of takes up my day.
One of your longtime D2 rivals, Merrimack, They made the switch to D1 a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I know you had battles with them going back to your days as a player, right? And they made the switch to D1 a few years ago. Last year, I don't know if this is a rule that I was unaware of or that I had forgotten because I hadn't thought about it in so long. But to the best of my understanding, the rule was always when you're talking about the NCAA tournament, if you win your conference, you're in, right? They won their conference and were told the team you just beat, they're going in, you're done for the season. And it all has to do with this bizarre rule where for the first 4 years that you transition from D2 to D1, you can't qualify for the national tournament.
Yeah.
To me, it's
brutal. Yeah, so it's it's a long time, basically, to the existence of the NCAA and that range, like long time old bad rule, and it's called the transition rule. So as you transition from a Division II or a Division III up to a Division I institution, they say, okay, you are going to have to wait 4 years. It actually used to be 5, I believe. But you're going to have to now wait 4 years to be eligible for March Madness. So it's kind of like if you want to join the club, you got to pay your dues in essence. And that's kind of the gist of it. So, yeah. So Merrimack University, who's in our league, they won the postseason tournament. We actually weren't even eligible to play in our conference tournament last year. So we finished second in the league by way of the transition stuff. We couldn't play in our conference postseason tournament. So do we get to that point? Do we win it? Who knows? But we would have had a shot. But regardless, so they win the league because of this transition period. They weren't eligible to go to March Madness. So who did they beat in the NEC Championship? FDU, Farley Dickinson. What does FDU do? The world now knows they went and beat, knocked off number one seed Purdue.
Yeah.
FDU wasn't supposed to be there by way of Merrimack having beat them in the conference championship, but the transition rule allowed them to go through. So, I mean, it obviously worked out for FDU. They had an incredible magical run and magical season. But, yeah, it's just this rule that the NCAA still has, and they've had it for a long time. Actually, I think it was like 3 years ago, Bellarmine University, I think it was like the OVC, they won their conference, the OVC, but they couldn't go through. So it's a rule that everyone's trying to get changed here that, because what we're saying and what all these schools are saying, the only people that's really screwing are the kids. Like,
yeah, that's what I was going to say. Coaches, yeah.
But like for the student athlete experience, the student athletes, they put all this time and effort in. And then it's like, oh, well, we've had this long time rule that, nope, sorry, you can't go, you know, to March Madness. It's hurting them. So it's a rule that everybody says should be changed. They say if it goes to a vote, it's probably going to get changed, but it just hasn't happened yet.
Like you can literally, the NCAA takes forever to change a rule. Shocking.
They change a lot of rules that benefit them in different ways, but this one.
I know.
You could literally lose a student. Like if it's a 4 year wait, that freshman comes in thinking, yeah, we're eligible. No, you're not for 4 years. And then they're gone from the school. So, you know what I mean? What's the incentive for them to really like have that competitive spirit? Right. You know what I mean? At that point, they're not getting to,
but
you understand what I'm saying. Like the goal for some of these kids is to get into that March Madness tournament.
Exactly. Well, and that's part of it now, especially like the way things are here with the NCAA transfer portal. Like kids are jumping ship, you know, at the drop of anything. So that like you want to, and I think part of it's hard where typically freshmen and young kids come in and they struggle. They got to learn how to go through the grind. They got to learn how to deal with adversity. They got to grow and get better. And if they don't get that, you know, that carrot at the end of it, like they're sometimes up and gone. But so, and you look at it for now, just with all the transfers, like kids might not even wait out a 4 year transition period. You know, we're basically almost halfway through ours right now. So we're getting closer. We've been allowed, our league actually changed our conference rules. So we're now eligible in our conference tournament, which is a good thing. And really helpful, but that 4 year March Madness rule, it sucks. It's just unfortunate for these kids who work so hard every single day. And it's not their fault. Like, that's the other side of it. These kids didn't sign up for, you know, or put themselves in that situation by way of these schools. It's like the presidents made a decision to, hey, we're going to move up. And yes, kids sign up to be as part of a transitioning school, but these presidents are making decisions, like the kids are then still getting hurt from it. So it's something that needs to be changed. It's got to be looked at.
It definitely needs to be addressed because it's not helping anyone. And ultimately, it's not like any transitioned team is being gifted a spot to the tournament. You still got to earn it. Right. If you're good enough to get there, you should be there.
Exactly.
You'll have your one shining moment, right?
I know.
Could you imagine, you know, all these like league expansion teams, like when they did it in the NHL and, you know, the Las Vegas Knights show up. Could you imagine if they told them, you know, you're not allowed to play in the Stanley Cup finals or in the playoffs, no matter how good you do for the first 4 years of your existence here?
Well, you know what it does remind me of? It reminds me of when the Raptors and the Grizzlies got their expansion team in the NBA. And they were not allowed. They had to work. Remember we talked about this, Tid, with Gary Trent on the show. They had to have 50% the salary cap of every other team in their first three seasons. And they weren't allowed a number one pick for their first 3 years. So even if they won the lottery. So the year that Allen Iverson went number one, guess who actually won the lottery? Toronto. But they weren't allowed to pick number one. So they had to get number two. And got Marcus Camby instead. I mean, you know, like,
why? And you look at that, like, that's been changed to benefit the teams and the cities, but this rule hasn't yet. So it's
wild.
Hopefully you guys, if you want to take this weekly with every one of your podcasts and bring it up and start getting people to get involved and make the change, I'll give you guys all the credit.
I'm going to raise hell. Chris,
I'm writing a stern letter.
let's step away from the college game for 1 second. I want to ask you, because as a Canadian, a longtime player, a Canadian that's living south of the border right now, did you have any visceral feelings about Canada having their best ever finish at the FIBA World Cup?
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, I was so proud of those guys, and just, I was a fan, you know, watching. I tried to watch every single game that I could. Obviously, there's so much talent, you know, like you look at that team from Shea, Dylan, like they're just so good now. There's some, you know, the top players in the NBA, the top players in the world, and it's only going to get better, and they're going to continue to, you know, Wiggins is going to get added to that. And like, I'm just so excited for Canada basketball, excited to be a part of it, you know, in my certain ways. And I was with the national team, you know, for a couple of years while I was a player and trying to get back in, hoping to get, you know, a phone call to come back and coach with the national team. And I'll do it in any single capacity because I love Canada. I love Canada basketball. I want nothing but the best for and support for them, but just so excited for them. And I think that, you know, at the Olympics next year, they're going to have a really good shot. You know, obviously the U.S. here is loading up and as they're going to, but for what Canada basketball is, it's awesome. It truly is. From where it's come, you know, from what Steve Nash has done, you know, what Rowan's done, Keith Vassell, like all those guys that have just built and paved the way to now here we are on, you know, one of the top countries in the world. It's just awesome to see.
It was like minutes after Canada beat the U.S. at FIBA. It's like LeBron put out the bat signal, like, you know, summon the Avengers. Everyone's got to go to France.
I saw a flashing light around here. I didn't know what it was, but that makes sense.
they were trying to see if they could pull you. They even pulled in Embiid. What the hell?
I got Jason Tatum like living like 30 minutes away, so it's probably a sign to Tatum or whatever. But no, man, those guys deserve so much credit. The coaching staff, you know, with what they're doing, it's cool because I know a lot of the guys. I know a lot of the coaches. I'm friends with them, and a lot of us have grown up together in certain ways, so it's really cool to see.
And I saw this morning a record 26 Canadians in the NBA this season on NBA rosters, which is pretty wild when you think about it. It used to be that if you put together a men's senior team, if you had one or two NBA players, you were in good shape, right? But now it's like it's crazy the amount of talent that we have. Listen. When you were a kid heading to college, you were on a short list of one of the top Canadian point guards ever produced. And I hate to say it, but now you're kind of below Shea and Jamal. And
just a little bit. And deservedly so. Those guys would kill me.
So the talent just keeps on coming out of this country, which is amazing, right? Because for a long time we were only known for producing big lumbering guys. Now we're producing skill guys.
Right. I mean, obviously the way AAU is, and you know, being able to come to the States and play in every single weekend all year long, it's you're just more exposed to the game. And yeah, kids are better and better and bigger. And even like recruiting, like when we go, I go watch a lot of Canadian basketball, seeing some of the youth that are just the level and the talent, it's incredible. Like, obviously it's never going to overtake hockey in Canada, but it's approaching a, like, it's coming. It's really incredible.
But it is now. It is now, right? It hasn't always been that way, though. Obviously, it wasn't that way when you were a kid.
No.
Right. So how is it that a white Canadian kid, right, growing up in the burbs, I would assume, because if you knew this guy back then, you know what I mean? You, right. Like, how is it that you said to yourself, I'm going to make a living at basketball?
So like Donnie said, my parents, my dad coached me. My mom was a coach. I knew for me, when I was done my playing career, when I, you know, put the shoes away, I was going to coach one way or another. My parents were coaches and teachers. So my path was, I'm going to coach or be an educator. And I happen to be a teacher, and my classroom is a gymnasium right now. So
there had to be something as a kid that you were like, I don't want to do what my parents do. What was it?
When I was actually at Brandon, out in Manitoba, coaching for 2 years, I went into teacher's college. So I was coaching, but also in teacher's college to kind of like, you know, open up both doors and both opportunities. And obviously the stars aligned for me to go down the coaching route. But I loved, you know, those aspects and loved what they did. And I saw, like, even like with Donnie, like back then, like, I remember watching my parents, they would bring people into our house. Like, I had different brothers that I never even knew, and they were not biological siblings that lived with us. And like, Right. Just that ability to impact other people and help other people and give to others and mentor. Like, the guy Junior and Kenny who lived with us and lived in our basement. And like Don was at that. We were always together. Like, now having that ability to impact people, obviously through sport, but through education, through the classroom, like I fell in love with it as a kid and knew that was going to be the path one way or another.
And it was the same thing. You got kids staying at your place now.
That's a violation. NCAA violation. I can't really go down that road here.
It was obvious. Even back when Chris was a high school kid, if you had 5 minutes to talk to him, the way his brain processed the sport, it's like, this guy's going to coach one day. He sees the game in a way that his peers did not. and he played with some high IQ players, don't get me wrong, but he saw the game in a different way. And it was obvious to everyone that he was going to be a great coach one day. And the fact that his dad, George Krause, is a legendary coach in the Niagara Falls Hall of Fame, right?
He
comes from good pedigree, and George also coached in the NCAA as an assistant coach. But you know, Chris is really taking up the mantle and doing the family proud. I want to ask you this question, Chris. I don't know if there are any basketball podcasts or people that you like to listen to or have time to listen to.
I try. I mean, I'm just so tired. If I can get like on the road, like Basketball Immersion with Chris Oliver, he does some great stuff.
Chris Oliver's great.
I'll tell you what, like, I like listening to like different sports and different things, like football, and like listening to Sean McVay, who coaches, like just getting a different perspective. I love sports. I'm not just an only basketball guy. Like, just, you know, like stuff like that. So like, it's more like when we're traveling, I'm on the road, but I got two little kids that I don't have a ton of free time, and any downtime away from my own video, I'm asleep nowadays.
As long as it's not Coco Melon. But I was listening to JJ Redick's podcast not long ago.
He's awesome. And,
he's super smart, right? High IQ guy. No surprise. He had a interview this past summer to be an NBA head coach without any coaching experience. But he's that high IQ, a guy. I was listening to his podcast and he had, you know, some live listeners asking questions, and someone said to him, why do you still care so much about watching the NBA product? You should watch college ball. It's so much better. The guys try harder. They put more effort in. They work harder. He pissed, like really offended. And he said, listen, I love college basketball. If you think that the guys in the NBA aren't trying hard, you're just wrong. You know, he's like, they're trying hard. It's just a different game. It's a different animal. And then he started talking about something really interesting. And he said, when I watch college basketball today, they're running the exact same sets. Defenses are changing constantly. Actions are changing constantly. People are doing different things. College basketball in general kind of stuck in the past in terms of schematically the way that they play the game. You hear me, Chris?
I don't think so. I got you. I don't think so. Like, I think, you know, when getting into it and you watch, we're now breaking down all these different scouts and all these different coaches and all these different schemes. And there's a lot of nuances that you just, I think part of it, you don't get to see the game to game from everybody like the NBA is shown, where you got, like, you're probably watching every single game of the Raptors. We're watching all the Celtics here. You're watching LeBron every single night, and you're seeing they play a 24-second shot clock where the NCAA is 30. It's a different game with 6 seconds difference is different. But, I think the NBA, they try a little bit more with 82 games and opportunities, but there's the game trickles down from the league to college ball, like all the different actions people try. I think good coaches are good thieves. Like we steal from each other nonstop. You know, you see something you like, totally. You steal it, you put it to your own, and you just got to morph it into your own players. So I don't think the college game, you know, is outdated, or the league is just, they're the best of the best for a reason. And they, you know, there's also that ability with, you know, a Luka Doncic, all the stuff that Slovenia is doing. I guarantee he's telling his coaches and Jason Kidd, hey, let's do this. Or I saw, like, so they've got more access, obviously, to the world's game. But, you know, if you were to follow a lot of teams over here, you're going to see a lot of different variations if you really get into the nitty gritty. But the NBA, the talent in the NBA, it's unmatched, obviously. I do think the college player guys play harder in college. You have less games. There's not, you know, the wear and tear of an 82 plus game season with playoffs. We don't have that. That's not this level. So, and those guys at the NBA level are making more money than these college guys are making. So it's a little different from factors, but there's still some pretty good coaches in the NCAA.
Well, I mean, think about how many like college players there are, right? Like the amount of college players that there are, and then you're going to have like a couple of hot shots on each team or something, right? But then those hot shots go to the big times, right? I know that like with football, when you talk to a lot of the football players, they say, what changed from when you were playing college ball to when you got to the NFL? And I'm sure that a lot of it is the same kind of answers across all sports once you go from college to the majors, and they all say defense.
Yeah.
It's defense. And I can imagine it's that in the NBA too, because you're not playing against, you know, young Timmy, who's not going to make it in the NBA. He's a decent college player, but he's not going to make it in the NBA. And you're got game, and you can get around him and you can play around him, right? In the NBA, just like in the NFL, those people don't exist. Everybody's a certified killer. You know what I mean? So like,
and that's where, like, at the college level, exactly to your point, Chris, like you're going to put the ball in your best player's hands more often than not. And so the variations might be a little less than the league, the NBA, because, okay, this guy does this well at the college level. Let's let him do that more and more and more. And there's not as many guys who can stop him. And the options that you need to come up with are a little bit less compared to, you know, the different matchups and length and athleticism in the NBA. So you got to do more things at certain times.
It's crazy. Crazy. How much time do you get off out of the year?
Honestly, the way recruiting is right now, it's recruiting 24/7, 12 months a year. And we're actually, I believe they're talking at the Division I level here to try to give men's college coaches a week off, like to have a dead period. There's no time off. And honestly, actually going back to the question from earlier, what's one of the new things I learned? We have to recruit that much more at this level. It's more constant and busier, more scholarships, more spots to fill, more cutthroat, more all the above, but there's not a lot of downtime.
Chris, if there was an opportunity where you could have the NCAA just magically apply a couple, one, two, three, whatever it is, you tell me, different rules from the NBA game to your game. Are there any rules you'd want to steal from the NBA?
Yeah, get rid of the transition rule, because they did that for the Raptors and the Grizzlies back in the day. Remove this transition rule. If we could go to the 24-second shot clock, I do think that should be done. I believe we're the only league in the world, men or women anywhere, that plays with a 30-second clock. So the entire world plays 24 seconds.
I know high school kids in Canada play with 24 seconds.
I don't know. Well, they play with about six with their shot selection. I think the 24-second shot clock, you know, it creates more scoring opportunities. The game's a little bit quicker. Everyone's talking the new, like the goaltending rule with allowing athleticism to play more of a factor, where you can take the ball off the rim after the first shot, after the first touch of the rim, like the bouncing on the rim, like that would be fun. That would be the more athleticism, the higher level teams are going to have guys that can do that. But that would be a cool thing. They do it in FIBA. The NBA's talked about, should they allow it or not? I don't know. Outside of that, like the game, they've changed the game quite a bit, like with less physicality to allow more scoring, more freedom of movement to get, you know, more scoring and things like that already. So I think we're probably trickling into a lot of the NBA rules from that aspect already.
You're not begging for a coach's challenge?
Actually, you know what? That would be good. I would take a challenge. I would take that. I'll add that in there.
Yeah, damn right you would. Yeah. Come on. There's never been a ref that got a call right that you didn't.
I'm not going to comment on that. The referees that we have are the best in the business. So I'm going to,
All right. You stick with that. I like that.
We got to play. I got to play in 11 days. So I'm not commenting on officials yet.
I read a statistic that said in the entire history of the Stonehill men's basketball program, you are involved in 24% of all of the games that have ever been played, whether it's as a player or as a coach, which is why I refer anonymous with that school. That being said, is there a coaching dream in your head? I know you have friends in the NBA. Is there a coaching dream in your head to go professionally as a head coach?
I mean, I think like you always wonder, you always think about it. I am honestly, like I've learned and my faith just with where I'm at, like I'm really happy and really content with what I'm doing. I mean, I went and watched the Celtics in practice a couple weeks ago. I've been over there a bunch over the years, so I know them. I know a handful of those guys, Coach Mazzulla, Brad Stevens, I've got to know over the years, like. So yeah, it's like when it's in your face and when you're watching on TV, you're like, wow, that would be cool. But there's just so much more behind the scenes that, you know, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing as much here to have time with my family and kids when I'm able to with that travel schedule. So I, you know, if the the phone rings, I'm going to answer it. Doesn't mean a change is going to happen, because I'm very appreciative and thankful where I'm sitting. And even just, I haven't had to move since I came back to Stonehill, you know, as an assistant to the head coach and now a Division I head coach. It's, you know, I got to be appreciative and thankful and just do everything I can to, for the school here. But if the phone rings, I'll answer it, and then we'll have a conversation.
Listen, Chris, I was just going to say, okay, you guys from Stonehill behind the camera, he said what you wanted him to say. You can leave now.
Yeah, really. CK, listen, man, it's been so good catching up with you. Honestly, it's been way too long. I say this without hyperbole, and I say this with all sincerity. You and your brother and your dad and your mom, you know very well, you've always been like extended family to me. I love all you guys very, very much. I want you to please give my best to your lovely wife, your kids. I apologize for stealing you away from all of them tonight, and I know that you don't get a lot of downtime with the family, so we really appreciate you taking the time out for us. Best of luck on the season. Please know we will be watching with interest. And you know what? Maybe we can do this again at some point during the year and see how things are going. And if I can make it work, dude, I'm making a trip down to Stonehill this year because I miss that gorgeous campus.
I appreciate it, man. We'd love to have you. No, and this was, you are family forever and always. So it was so good to catch up. I appreciate you having me on. So good to see you guys doing this, and would love, you guys are welcome. You can have back. You can sit on the bench if you guys show up. We'll come on down at any point.
Oh, now it's a done deal. now it's a done deal. Wait, before we go, Kraus, tell me if you remember this, okay? I want to see if I crack a smile out of you. I hope you can hear it. Tell me if you remember this.
I do very much so. Yes. I feel like it was like once a week or once every other week you would call me or I'd phone you and we would just blast that on the behind the that takes us way back right there.
We went through this bizarre phase when this song was hot. When this song was hot, Chris and I went through this bizarre phase where we would just yell this lyric at each other constantly. And then sometimes we'd be just pick up the phone and call and go, I ain't never scared.
Amazing.
We were that weird and strange.
Chris Kraus, head coach at Stonehill University, Division I. Go get him, man. We really appreciate your time and best of luck in season.
Awesome.
Go whip those boys' asses so tomorrow.
Appreciate it.
Well, it's not very often.
Fun,
it's not
man.
Very
often I know that was a lot of basketball talk.
Yeah, but I mean, you know what? Listen, I'm more interested in finding out what this campus is really about. You know what I mean? Because I've been to a few college campuses,
gorgeous,
in my day. I've never ever as a student, obviously. You know, so it'd be like a Rodney Dangerfield back to school moment for me, my old ass. But I mean, you know, I have been to a few campuses. So listen, I would love to see how nice it is for sure.
It's beautiful. Like you could literally take out your phone, walk the campus, and anywhere you point and shoot, it's like a postcard. It's great. Gorgeous. You know, it is so beautiful, and you look around and go, oh my, like the first night I got there, I'm looking around, I go, wait, college kids go here? It's pristine.
Wow.
It's stunning. You know, like the grounds are immaculate. Like it's just, you look at it and go, oh my God, this place is like paradise, you know? And then the facilities are beautiful. And that's many years ago. I'm long overdue for a return.
There you go, my man. It's good talk. Good times. Anyways.
I guess we're
We're up against it right now.
Do we still have time, or what?
The only reason I say we're up against it is because you are having like audio nightmares right now.
Am I?
You're completely like the voice to video ratio. It's like I'm talking to somebody overseas. Now, I don't know if that's mine or if that's yours or if that's just StreamYard in general is having one of those nights. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it might be exactly that. Okay. Well, in that case, technical problems can F off because we'll just sign off.
Exactly. We ain't under nothing.
It's Ted. I'm Donnie. That's Ted. I'm Donnie. We'll see you next
time. Fuck this shit. I'm out. Fuck this shit. I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me. I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit. I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit. I'm out.
All right then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of here.
Fuck this shit. I'm out.